Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're talking to someone again from Mode Global Holdings. Now, the last time we had Jonathan Rowland, the executive chairman of Mode, on the podcast, and it was a very interesting chat we all had. But today we have Mode's chief product officer, Yanis Legler. Hi, Yanis, how are you doing?
Hi, Mark. I'm doing very well. How about you?
Yes, very good. Thank you, Yanis. It's great to be talking to someone else from Mode. And of course, Kenny, as usual, is joining us. Kenny, are you doing okay?
Yes. Yep. Welcome to the podcast, Yanis. It's nice and sunny in Scotland. Where is it you're calling from today?
Thanks, Kenny. I guess weather here is holding up quite well. I'm not in the UK, but getting back very soon, and I'm looking forward to get back. Things seem to be getting exciting again. I saw a lot of pictures of my colleagues going out, so definitely excited to get back.
Yeah, definitely. The Western world seems to be opening up a lot more with the COVID situation now. But you know, there's still a few countries that are just sort of hitting the peak of the second wave. But Hopefully within the next 2 or 3 months, once the vaccinations start to kick in, we can all get back to, well, some sort of normality, as normal as it'll ever be again. I don't think it'll ever be the same. You know, life's probably changed forever. You know, we're doing this over Zoom, and I think everybody will be doing everything over Zoom from now on. It just seems to be the norm. It's just been an accepted bit of technology.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, talking of technology, Yanis, if we could maybe bring you in, and if you could perhaps start by, I know we had a chat before we recorded, and you're not that old, you're just a bit younger than me, but I would love to hear about your background and where you came from. So it's sort of, the floor is yours to go back as far as you like, and sort of give us a bit of a history of Yanis.
I guess I'll just start with where I grew up. I grew up in Germany and also in Switzerland, where I went to school. I guess back then, if you want to relate to Mode, I was always fascinated with business in every sort of way. I have kind of, before I went on to study, when I was going to school, I was kind of really into kind of software and also mm-hmm. music software and production, and that's something I really explored and then tried out a couple of e-commerce business models here and there before I started working and also before I started studying. So that's been really something I enjoyed, and then I went on to study first in Switzerland at University of St. Gallen, which was like something which I really enjoyed. I enjoyed business at first, then finance and accounting later, and I think it really got me interested in mainly, I guess, financial markets. That's something I always really enjoyed, because for me, financial markets are a perfect reflection of the price of something. So the price is a perfect reflection of all information out there about a particular stock or about a particular product. So that always has fascinated me a lot. Mm-hmm. I studied first in St. Gallen in Switzerland. I went on to study in New York afterwards at Columbia University, which I enjoyed also a lot. It's a great city. I went on I went back there after I finished studying as well to again try a couple of things related to music. And afterwards, I studied for my master's also in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. which is a lot of people consider the New York of Asia. And that was a great experience as well. So that's kind of a little bit where I studied and the things I explored. It was always like kind of finance related, but you obviously get to do a lot of different things related to that. But I think the real kind of experience starts when you go and kind of go away from the academia and the theories and you start applying things in real life. I think that's the real school. I think business, just setting up a business and doing things is the best school you can have. So, but it was still good to experience all of that. And then, I mean, what I took away, I guess, from these experience, because it was quite diverse, the places I've lived. For me, it was already back then, I always tried out all the different ways of paying and setting up accounts with all these kind of, you know, banks and fintech players, which back then were, you know, they were starting to evolve after the financial crisis in 2008. And I was fascinated with the differences in how people save and how people pay, because I come from Germany, for example. In Germany, most of the people, I would say, still, it has changed now a little bit with COVID, but we used to pay a lot with cash, like with actual cash, right? And also in terms of savings. So you just, you have a savings account and you earn interest on it. Now, not anymore, obviously, but also the average, you know, like person in Germany also doesn't really invest in the stock markets because it's considered risky. And that is obviously very different in the US, for example, or in Asia, where you, for example, take out loans to invest and all these things. So it's just very different, you know, like without any judgment. But that was very interesting for me to see and how that kind of applies in products. So that was something I really enjoyed. And then afterwards, I started my career, started in finance. I was firstly working in a kind of a tech-enabled life insurance, which has whose products are kind of in various European markets. The company is called FWU, and in also in the Middle East. So I really like explored all different kind of markets and how people's attitudes are towards saving. Longer term life insurance, you always have a very long time horizon. And that was for me very interesting. So the kind of different affinities to passive investing and store of value over a long time, that has fascinated me. And then at that time, I just got, as they say, the crypto bug. I just became fascinated with crypto. That was, I guess in 2016, 2017. And it just, for me, all the things I had learned in finance, in my studies and in my work before, it was just, you kind of realize with crypto, where you design something from first principles, I guess, how many flaws the current financial system had. So I really like explored it deeply. I did the courses that were out there at the moment. There was, for example, an Oxford blockchain strategy course, but you know, like you can get so many information in the internet. Like it's really fascinating. So I decided I have to work in this space. You know, I decided I want to make an impact there. And it was exactly the time when my old boss who I was working for introduced me to Jonathan, who had just kind of decided to set up a business which should become a, you know, like a very credible player to work in crypto. And my previous boss was a board member in one of Jonathan's banks. So he connected me, and that's how it all started, you know, at Mode. I mean, I can go into all of this, what happened at Mode. That's a whole nother story, but I guess that's what kind of led me there. And since then, I mean, we started a journey here. It feels like ages already. It's been like, I think, 3 years now. At Mode, and I think we've achieved quite a lot, and that's where we are now. So where do we want to go next? That's the question, right?
Exactly, where do you want to go next? But that's nice to know where you came from. So really, what it always fascinated you about these kind of people's attitudes towards savings and sort of storing value over time. And it's interesting what you say about the people in Germany not sort of being debt averse, whereas people in Asia take on debt to invest. You know, it's very, very different attitude. So that's really what, that's always fascinated you then, has it, that kind of concept?
Well, Mark, I think we see an interesting development also at the moment, I think in general, because when you want to save long term, so we all work for our money, right? You have some value. You want to ideally kind of plan long term to make a purchase at some point. Maybe you want to buy a house, or you know, you want to send your kids to a good school or something like this. It's just become so difficult to just store your value. So back in the days, I would say you were doing just fine by putting your money into a savings account, and you were earning like 10% interest on it, right? 5 to 10%. That's gone. like that concept is completely gone. We're in an historically low interest environment.
It'll never come back either.
They're not going to come back, exactly, Kenny. And the money, plus the money is inflating, right? So there is this concept of a CPI, obviously, like the where you have like, I would say a basket of goods, and that measures the inflation, but it's not the things that, you know, some people actually want. Like, what do we want? We want good healthcare. We want good, good education. We want to, you know, like we want to have certain, we want to buy a house. So that's not things that go into the basket of the CPI. And these things have all become more expensive. So we know if you want to store your value for a longer time, it's becoming more and more difficult if you just put your money to a savings account. In fact, it's becoming impossible. So what do? We need to invest in the stock market. Mm-hmm. And that's why now the average person, I think, is kind of being forced to invest in the stock markets. And stocks are a little bit more risky than a savings account. So that's why you see these valuations and people are taking on a lot of risk. And I think that's something not natural. So what I kind of want to bring back also with the product at Moat is to give you this kind of store of value back, like kind of like a savings account. Obviously it's not a protected savings account, but it's a savings technology where you can make long-term plans again without having to worry about whether your government, you know, like the central bank is inflating the currency or if the stock markets are being manipulated and so on. So, you know, like that's something I think which there's a need for in all sorts of markets.
That's very interesting. That's a very interesting point you say about people who, maybe that's why people have gone to investing, because they want that extra thing they're not getting anymore. I hadn't actually considered that. I thought maybe it was to do with how easy it is these days to open a trading account. Information is everywhere and everyone can be a sort of stay-at-home private investor. But that's another sort of take on it. Go on, Kenny.
It's actually very complicated now to walk into a bank and actually open a bank account. It is an absolute nightmare. And I think we had this conversation, perhaps it was with Jonathan, Mark, that, you know, the people that are born now, you know, this generation of people that are, you know, born, let's say, 2010 onwards, they'll probably never need to get into a bricks and mortar bank in their life. I mean, it's very rarely I get now to the bank unless I really have to. So, no, bricks and mortar banks are a nightmare to get anything done. So,
yeah, it's not ideal. And I want to just pick up on something that you said, Kenny, there about sort of interest rates and the fact that, you know, they've gone, and you actually said that they're not going to come back. And Yanis, you said sort of the flaws in the financial system. I mean, why are we at that stage, do you think? Why are interest rates so poor, and why won't they come back? What is going to happen?
Okay, we can, like, this is a huge topic, right? But I'm trying to like simplify it a little bit.
Sure.
There is just a lot of outstanding debt that needs to be there in order to serve existing debt and serve all these kind of budget deficits that we're seeing across all countries around the world. And this is why we cannot just raise interest rates, right? So this is why interest rates are low and they're going to be low for a longer time. And whenever there's a slight hike in interest rates, the economy gets very nervous. So you've seen this. We just had, you know, like some sort of, for example, if you look at the treasury yields that were just rising slightly, the long end of the curve a couple of weeks back, the markets were very nervous about it. So I guess the Fed or central banks in general are just very, you know, like, cautious in raising rates because they want the economy to recover, especially after such a time like with the COVID crisis. And that's why we're just gonna keep rates low, and money will, if you call it that, it will just be printed, and it's gonna probably stay for that, you know, for a longer time. And that's, you know, like I'm there's a lot of different like opinions and there's judgment around it.
Yeah.
You can judge the people in control for doing what they're doing, or you just don't do it. But what like you cannot deny is that it's going to remain that way probably for a longer time. So you just need to kind of you kind of need to make decisions accordingly. And that's as a private person, and that's also as a business, right? So if you have capital to allocate also as a business, you need to see, like, if you want to hold it in cash, it's probably going to inflate, you know? And I think that's where we kind of kicked off last year, after, like, I would say in March, when you just realized that central banks will print a lot of money. You had kind of companies coming out and saying, for example, if we want to go into Bitcoin already, right? Mm. You had companies like MicroStrategy, who were a software business, right? They were saying, we're sitting on $500 million of cash. What are we doing with this cash? You know, like, what are we doing with this money in order for it not to be inflated away? And this was kind of the first move where they said, we are going to invest it in Bitcoin because we want to protect it against inflation. But there's various other examples of individuals, funds, companies that were going this way. But there's always, like, this situation when there's a lot of excessive money printing. Investors are seeking this kind of inflation-proof safe haven, which used to be gold and will now most likely be Bitcoin.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Interesting. Go on, Kenny.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to bring that up, actually. You know, the older ones amongst us, it was always seen as gold, as a store of value. But now it's obviously Bitcoin, and it's quite irrelevant today that we're having this podcast that's actually reached an all-time high, I think $63,000. And to think it was only... I think it was like 12 months ago, it dropped to about $4,000. So it's an astonishing rise in the last year.
That's what's scary though, isn't it? The fact that it did that. That's very volatile.
So it is volatile, but to the upside. So if you look at the, annual growth rate, compounded rate over the last 10 years, it's 200%, right? And if you have a new asset class emerging, a new store of value emerging, there's going to be volatility. Mm. But what you care about ultimately is purchasing power of a certain asset or of a currency or whatever you call it. If you think about it, every commodity asset or whatever is money ultimately. It's not a currency, but it's money. Mm. What you want to have is you want the purchasing power of that particular asset to go up. And that's the case with Bitcoin, right? So if you look at the cycles, I think that's the best way to look at Bitcoin longer term. If you think about the valuations and the bubbles, because that's usually what you hear. It's a bubble, and also the volatility. Volatility argument is true. So you have these kind of halving cycles every 4 years where the newly issued supply gets basically reduced by half. And in 2017, after that happened in 2016, we saw kind of a bubble in 2017, mainly driven by retail. And after that, there was kind of a bear market. What we then saw last year, when basically all assets crashed in around March, there was just a liquidity crisis, right? There was a liquidity crisis, and whatever investors can liquidate in that moment, in the most easiest way, they will liquidate, and that was Bitcoin, right? And yeah, since then, I think the narrative behind Bitcoin has played out perfectly, and it has, you know, from this sharp drop back then, where I think it went to 4,000 or something in that sort. It's now arrived at 63,000, and if you think about couple of aspects. Like, I see the total addressable market of Bitcoin something in the 200 trillion, 300 trillion mark. Sounds crazy, but I can explain. If you think about it that way, and it's currently at about over 1 trillion, it still has a long way to grow, right? So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of the market cap of, say, Apple. Try to think, is that about 10 trillion from memory?
Apple is, I think, at 2 trillion now.
Is it 2 trillion? Yeah. So maybe, yeah.
How I like to look at it, Kenny, is like, not comparing Bitcoin to companies, even though that's being done a lot currently, but I compare it to other asset classes. So the Bitcoin has a market cap of over 1 trillion now. Gold's market cap is, however you define it, like what you include with that, is around, I would say, 10 trillion.
Yeah. Okay?
So then you look at the market cap of equities around the world, which is, please don't quote me on that. I think it's around 80 trillion. I really don't have the number in front of me now. And the bond market, the global bond market, is like double of that. And then you have currencies, then you have real estate, residential, commercial, and so on. So these are all kind of asset classes. And mm-hmm. if we go back to the very first point that I brought around store of value, I think like one really interesting thing is if you think about what do we want to do with our value, right? Like, for example, you earn some money, you have some disposable income that you want to, you know, set aside. Do you want to store that value, or do you want to take speculative bets to invest? You know, like, are you like the same way as an active investor would do? Like, in my opinion, investing is a full-time job if you want to do it well. Like, most of the people that don't know what they're doing in investing, they will lose money. So if you divide it this way, that you say people are, you know, maybe with half of their disposable income, they are just looking at a store of value. And with the other half, they're looking for, you know, making some speculative bets or whatever, you know, they want to call it. There's a huge total addressable market for the store of value around the world. And that's historically been in bonds and in, you know, some currencies with savings accounts and in some real estate. But that is shifting because bonds, for example, the bond market, which is huge, let's say between 100 and 200 trillion, that bond market, we have the lowest yields ever, which we said in the beginning, very low interest rates, and we have high inflation. So the real yields are negative. So there's this huge amount of value that will most likely look for different asset classes to store the value, right? And that's how I kind of derive a total addressable market for Bitcoin Cap. Now I got confused. For Bitcoin, you know, the total addressable market is somewhere in the trillions, hundreds of trillions, you know? So it has a long way to go.
Well, what did you say? You said it's about 1 trillion at the moment, and you see where you're going to what? Sorry, so I'm putting on. Sorry, that's a hard question. Sorry,
it's fine. Yeah. So I mean, obviously, like there's so many factors that can get into like the success of Bitcoin. I think the risk is relatively low, but there will always be a risk. But I think that Bitcoin can reach a market cap of over 100 trillion.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Okay. Okay. Well, won't hold you to that, but thank you for your opinion anyway. Go on, Kenny.
Yeah, there's plenty of articles going about today. I think I've seen one. It was a $1 million Bitcoin price by the end of 2022. So, I mean, and we used to laugh when people were saying, you know, Bitcoin would be 50,000 by the end of 2021. And here we are. You know, we're in 2021 and it's already 63. So all these people that are getting mocked are proving themselves right. But it's interesting that Mode have obviously adopted Bitcoin as their main store of value. I think Jonathan said that we're focusing in Bitcoin just now, but they may look at other crypto in the future. So why did Mode make this particular decision to stick with Bitcoin for the time being?
Yeah, so the kind of vision and the goal behind the retail focused product, so as I'm sure it was mentioned in the last podcast, but maybe for listeners now, so Mode has two aspects to its business. One is the retail facing app, mobile app.
Yep.
And then we have a payment gateway for e-commerce businesses, and this is kind of the ecosystem we're operating. So our consumers will pay for goods with our merchants, and it will be very seamless. So that's kind of the goal behind it. So for the merchants, it's to accept value without friction, right? So that's the thing we want to solve here. But for the consumer side, it's you know, paying and sending value without friction. but also really to store value. We want to enable them to create wealth longer term. But what we want to do is we want to kind of help our customers to create wealth. And that's a long-term mission. And it's totally achievable, but you just need to make, you know, like some decisions, and we are happy to support on that. And here, I think Bitcoin and Bitcoin only can assist. So I'm in the crypto space since a bit, and things can get quite crazy, and sometimes the valuations are a little bit unreasonable. we're not at this point yet, but I'm sure we will get there later in the year. But or maybe we've started there with some prices. You've mentioned NFTs in the beginning. I think like we've seen some funny prices. But anyways, I think in 2017, a lot of new investors in the space, they were, you know, trying out crypto. They bought Bitcoin, and if they had just held on to this Bitcoin, they would have a lot of money now. But it's very easy to get kind of drawn into all these different altcoins and Ripple and so on, because you see all these gains and then you start trading. And it's just a fact that the majority of retail traders, if you don't really have an edge in investing, you'll end up losing money. And in this case, it's kind of losing your Bitcoin stack. So that is something which really needs to be brought, I think, to the attention of new joiners into the space, because it's very easy to get just sucked up into these like kind of new projects. And there's a lot of, you know, there's some stuff which is not really legitimate out there. So that's really, I think, important that you start with Bitcoin. You get to know really what Bitcoin is, and then you can explore other things, because a lot of the other things are experiments.
Mm.
And we really want to kind of assist in this mission to create wealth. And we have some users that really use us for their Bitcoin holdings. And then, you know, it transfers some funds out to maybe to you know, like to a non-custodial wallet. So they have their own hard wallet, or they might buy some other coins. But this is really, I think this is something I personally always want to, you know, like tell my friends when they start to invest in crypto, is that you really need to differentiate between Bitcoin and all the other stuff.
Mm.
So this is really like the game we're playing longer term.
And did you say that you think Bitcoin will be the sort of the one that remains, but there'll be other ones as well, I assume?
So if you, there's actually, now that we have more data since the last two bull cycles, there's quite sophisticated data and models that prove that most of the altcoins tend to go to, they either follow Bitcoin directly, or they tend to go to zero, towards zero compared to Bitcoin. So I would like encourage listeners to look at some models from Willy Wu, for example. He's one of the best on-chain analysts, I think, in the space. And it's very interesting, because a lot of people in the crypto space, they've tried out all the different altcoins, and then they come back to Bitcoin and they realize that really Bitcoin is long-term, also throughout bear markets, the best store of value, right?
Okay.
And you can make some nice gains sometimes if you're lucky with the other things. But when there's a bear market, or when, you know, like there's a little bit of a correction, these coins tend to decrease dramatically in price.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. There's one thing that caught my eye. Giannis, I was watching, I think Mode put out a nice little bit of media today. It was like a video showing their e-commerce solution. And the one thing right at the end that kind of, you know, ticked a lot of boxes for me was the loyalty payments in Bitcoin, which I thought was quite unique.
Yes, I'm really excited about this feature. So I think the loyalty space is also going kind of where disruption. So if you think about crypto as digital assets, you could argue that the loyalty points that we earn through, you know, airlines or whatever it may be, they're a digital asset as well. It's just that there is friction between transferring these assets, and you cannot take your LN points to another LN. So what we're saying at the moment is, what do people want at the moment? They want to get exposure to Bitcoin because it's the best performing asset of the decade, and it has the highest, the best risk reward ratio of all assets. So that's what shoppers really want. So we want to create a way to give shoppers exposure to Bitcoin without actually taking the risk of investing, to just try it out, right? And how great would it be to just make a purchase that you wanted to do anyways, and you get rewarded for it in Bitcoin, and you see, like, you see it going up. So that's really something I'm excited about. And I cannot disclose too much yet, but we will have a very unique offering there and the way that it's structured. So it will be very convenient for the customer. So yeah, that's something we're really exploring. But in general, I think at Mode, we're very excited about the payment solution, which we will be launching, which will be just, it's something game changing. So what I'm also very excited about, for example, we spoke a lot about Bitcoin, but I'm really excited about open banking. And I tend to draw a lot of kind of similarities there between Bitcoin and open banking, because they're both protocols, and they both democratize access. And I'm happy to kind of elaborate further on that. But that's the second big part to our business, the open banking side and the payment side, and that's the big focus at the moment.
Yeah.
Next to the Bitcoin business, where we're obviously seeing a lot of growth, but that's going to be the next step for us.
I mean, yeah, the open banking, that's pretty cool. I don't know if you have a Mode account, Kenny, but I opened a Mode account after we spoke. I downloaded it when we were on the podcast to Jonathan last time. Opened the account, very straightforward. Wanted to put some money in. Recognized I had the Lloyds Bank app on my phone. Took me there, did my fingerprint, money went in, seconds. And that's the very first time I've ever experienced, in my opinion, that is open banking. And then that's the very first time I experienced that. And I thought, that is awesome. That is so seamless and quick, and it just works. And then I put my money in, I bought my Bitcoin, I had enough, and I opened a Bitcoin jar. And yeah, it's my money I put in there is sat earning interest at 5% per year. And so I think, yeah, that the whole open banking thing, if that, it makes that those kind of transactions all very frictionless, yeah, it's the way to go.
I'm still trying to get over my issues with all the challenger banks that I had for various businesses. It was an absolute nightmare. So yeah, it's something. I mean, I've got a Revolut account, which I've had for a while, so yeah, quite a few people, including yourself, Mark, is urging me to download the Mode app. So it's something I will explore. And anything that's seamless and sort of KYC is ideal to me. And I must admit, because I've set up some crypto exchanges, I was really impressed with how quickly you could get on board with these companies. You know, they take a photograph of your phone, it asks you to say some words, and you know, it's brilliant. Whereas, like I said, we said earlier on, you know, walking into a mainstream bank and try to open an account, it's just an absolute nightmare. So yeah, I think I will go down the Mode route at some point soon. Mm-hmm. Remind me again, Mark, you know, you need to keep on my case and things like that. So you do.
Yeah, no, it's great. So, and yeah, I think that's the future, Yanis, isn't it? That this frictionless transactions.
Yes, I agree. So that's, I think, a big word for us, the seamless, making things seamless. So there's a couple of things to it. One of the biggest problems I identified in the crypto space was that, you know, like I'm speaking, you know, 3-4 years ago, when people were interested in crypto, they didn't know where to start and what to start with, which exchanges to start with. A lot of them were, you know, not the most credible. The sign-up flows were horrendous. It would take you a lot of time. You would have to, once you're onboarded after 3 days, you would have to transfer money to a bank in you know, God knows where. So like not the nicest experience. And that's, I think, the first kind of problem we wanted to solve in the market. So like a UK-based mobile app where you can sign up and KYC in less than 5 minutes and you're good to go. Okay. So you sign, and that's 24/7 any day of the week, right? You sign up and you're good to go. Because especially when you know, like your friends get all excited about Bitcoin and the price is moving up and you want to get in there, you don't want to wait 3 days. Mm. That's the first point of contact with this company and you get very frustrated with the company. So that's just something we solved, right? And then once you're in there, you can just, with open banking, you can just connect your bank account and you don't even have to leave the app. You just verify with your bank details and the money is in your Mode account right away. So that's been, you know, like a big step for us to just top up the wallet seamlessly. That's kind of the first touch point we have with open banking. But the plans kind of going forward are beyond that. So we will be using open banking to directly pay, right? So that goes into a whole nother topic. So if you think about payments as we have it in the Western world currently, it's very much dominated by the major card schemes, Visa and MasterCard. And here you have two parts to a payment, which one is authorization and the second is settlement, right? Mm-hmm. So when you pay with your card, when you tap your card or you use it in e-commerce, one part is the authorization. So to verify that it's actually you. And then the money will arrive at the merchant only like 2 to 3 days after. So there's a lot of kind of lag and friction between it, right? And that's mainly due to the whole settlement schema and that the card schemes settle between all the banks. Mm-hmm. What we will be doing is when you authenticate the payment, when you're at the point of checkout, you authenticate with your bank details or with your Mode details if you already have a balance with us. Mm-hmm. But if you pay with open banking, then the authentication is done through that, through these credentials. So it's a lot more secure than paying with your card details. And then that's the authentication. And then the settlement happens instantly. It's an account-to-account transfer. So the money arrives in the merchant's Mode account. Mm-hmm. It's in their bank account, you know? So here we're solving a decade-long issue that authentication and the settlement is separate. Now it's all in once. So this is where I think, and you can use it with all banks in the UK, right? So this is where open banking comes in, and you say that's fascinating because that was the layer that Visa and MasterCard were providing to connect and settle with all these banks afterwards. And now we do everything instantly, and it's powered by a protocol because all the banks open up their APIs.
Mm.
That's the beauty of technology and of kind of protocols which standardize and normalize certain things. And that's, I think, where we want to get to long term. If we look at the two protocols, Bitcoin and open banking, we want a savings protocol,
mm-hmm,
and wealth creation protocol, and we want to have a payment protocol that connects with all banks. And that's, I think, what we're working on in the next years.
Okay. No, it's lots to look forward to. And I mean, I guess the open banking thing then, that would be for any transaction in any currency, maybe not at the moment, but would that be the kind of plan?
So what the plan is that we're focusing on the UK market for mm-hmm. this year, because in the UK market, the way that open banking is already adapted with the bank coverage and also the faster payments, instant settlement, which is the payment rail that we're all using, right? This way, like the way we're setting up the product is seamless. So we are very particular about having a seamless product and kind of having great user experience. And we wouldn't launch anywhere if it's not that the case. And we are very confident about it in the UK. Mm-hmm. This cannot be done at the, and this needs to happen because otherwise people will not switch from using their cards.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be seamless. Otherwise there's no chance, right? A new product needs to be better or the same, and there needs to be a benefit. And we are very confident about that in the UK. However, there's some very good developments in Europe at the moment around kind of making the SEPA payment rails more accessible, and open banking is being more and more adopted. And we are already having, we have a couple of markets in mind where once we have the product set up here, we can enter these markets, and then we will add a lot of value to both consumers and businesses there. And then I think we have a fair chance of conquering these markets as well. Okay. So it's kind of a gradual rollout process. But I think this is the way which makes the most sense, because we are really kind of a product-driven company, which where we intend to have the best product available. So that's a very important consideration for us.
I mean, I guess I'm just sort of thinking about Bitcoin, and from what I know about that is it's not kind of designed for swift transactions. It can take quite a long time and can be sort of fairly expensive. And that's one of the reasons why one of my cryptos is Ripple or XRP, because of that utility. I mean, is that a consideration? Is that something to concern about or not?
So for us, I think, and this is also, again, a wider discussion. So Bitcoin is mainly a store of value.
Yeah.
So you can see it, you can look at it as gold, for example.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't really use gold for day-to-day transactions.
No.
So I think, but it's a very good point that you bring up, by the way. So I think Bitcoin will be used more as kind of a settlement layer between banks, and as a store of value and held in bigger amounts. And this is where services for people that don't, like for people that don't want to custody their own keys, which is completely fine, right? Like not everyone wants to do that with all money. So this is where services like Mode come in, because we are building something on top of the Bitcoin network. And we, for example, with us, you have your Bitcoin balance, but we custody it for you. And you can send other customers Bitcoin, you know, you can send them instantly without any friction. And also we will have integrations that merchants can accept Bitcoin, but, you know, like not everything needs to be settled on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Okay.
That's the important point here. Yeah.
I suppose the time's not far away when companies will start paying salaries partly in Bitcoin or crypto of some sort in the future. I think I spoke to Jonathan about it. There was Miami City employees that were talking about paying 50% of their salary in crypto and 50% just into their bank account, which is quite an interesting concept, but you think how much easier that would make payroll around the world. It would just be, as we talked about earlier on, seamless potentially.
Yeah, I think if you work in crypto, a lot of people that work in crypto, they want to hold also a substantial amount of their wealth or their value in crypto, because you just, you know, like you, I don't think you particularly work in this industry if you don't believe in it. So we all see that there's a big paradigm shift, and that's the thing with crypto, right? It's it's putting your money where your mouth is. So it's not all theories, but we are actually like, there is something at stake. You know, like we're not making theories around what could work out or what couldn't work out, you know, like will Bitcoin work out or not? I mean, the price proves it currently, right? And everyone who is kind of advocating it, I think, has some skin in the game and is investing in it also. So I think you'll see more and more kind of requests of getting some sort of salary in Bitcoin. I think it's a very interesting development.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Yeah, let's just to maybe finish off, because that's about 40 minutes already we've been chatting. What does the roadmap look like for the rest of 2021 for Mode? What are the key points we're going to hear about, or what you can tell us anyway?
Yeah, I mean, we have the app up and running. So I think that's really liked by customers. I think there's going to be a lot of inflow of new kind of investors that want to try out Bitcoin. And I think they're all going to explore in the UK market, they're going to explore Mode. So we're really focused on kind of maintaining the app and making sure that we can handle all the increased trading volumes. We just kind of published results today. Our Bitcoin trading volumes were up 316% compared to the last quarter. And our new customers increased also by 200% compared to last quarter. So that's already an effort, right? But obviously we're busy building. So I think the big next milestones will be the launch of the payment solution. and that's going to be end of Q2. So this is a big kind of product to launch because it will include kind of the payment gateway for merchants, and we will have some kind of new app redesign and offer functionality for our app customers, for our app users. So that's to be announced soon. And I think that's what a lot of customers are already looking forward to. That's really exciting. Then followed by that, we're trying to obviously launch the Bitcoin rewards as soon as possible. That's also going to be a really exciting, exciting part. And then, you know, various kind of ways for you as a customer to spend your money smarter. So we want to give you smart offers from customers. So that's really going to be like your, so the app is going to be your smart guide to invest smart and also to spend your money in a smart way. And then obviously we're keeping very busy with all the products we're rolling out for the merchants to make kind of more tailored offers to our customers. So these offers actually get taken, you know, like they need to be personalized. So that's a big, big part of the agenda until the rest of the year. And so that's a big part. Then we continue to grow the business. Then we're exploring other countries. So I think that's gonna keep us busy for the time being.
Yeah, sounds like you've got your hands full, definitely for the rest of the year.
Definitely.
Mark, you anything to finish off with?
No, I don't think so, Kenny. No, that's been fantastic to talk to you, Yanis. I think what you guys are doing at Mode is really interesting. And Jonathan, I think, certainly knows how to pick a team and to build a business, and it's going to be one to watch, absolutely. And thank you for sharing all your knowledge as well in Bitcoin and crypto that we talked about earlier on. So I hope we can catch up again. But for now, thank you very much for your time, Yanis. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yep, thanks very much, Yanis.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Kenny. I had a blast as well. Happy to speak to you again soon. Thanks for now.
Thanks, then. Bye bye. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.